to Genesis. We're going to start in chapter 46. We're going to try to get through 46 and all the way through 50 this morning. Be ready to cover a lot of ground, and then we'll start again. Or next week we'll have a sort of a recap as we close out our study of the book of Genesis. If you remember last week, it was time for Jacob to move to Egypt, and we're going to begin at that point where he actually does come with all of his family to Egypt. Before we begin our study, let's go to God in prayer. Dear Lord, we're so grateful to have this time to come together, others of like precious faith, to have this time to study from your word. Pray we'll be edified from this study. Pray that we'll learn more how to be pleasing in our service to you and to others. Pray you'll be with all of the teachers this morning. Help them to be effective in presenting their lessons, and help all the listeners to put aside the thoughts and cares of this world and focus on your will, how we can know it better, how we can follow it, how we can lead lives that will be pleasing to you. Bless us in those efforts. Bless and keep us and forgive us of our sins, we pray in Jesus' name. All right, so we're going to begin in verse 1 of Genesis chapter 46. A lot of ground to cover today, so some of this we'll go verse by verse. Some of it we're going to go through a little faster than the other part. But it begins in chapter 46, verse 1. So Israel set out with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba, and he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "I am God, the God of your fathers. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph will close your eyes." Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father and their little ones and their wives and the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. They took their livestock and their property, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and came to Egypt, Jacob and his descendants with him, his sons and his grandsons with him, and his daughters and his granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. And then it names all of those that came to Egypt. And I'm not going to read all of the names, but I certainly want to focus on the sons. And we've got those listed up there. Again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on there, but that's important because that is the tribes of Egypt. And from this time, if you can just imagine taking all of your family, all of your possessions, your children, your grandchildren, your children's wives, grandchildren's wives, everybody with you, and all move up like that, and just the luxury, though, of having the wagons that Pharaoh provided for them. So it made that transition a lot easier, I would think. And the important part of that is that they all went there. And we want to, like I say, without reading all of that, I want to drop down to verse 26. And we really want to focus on this. Of all those that went to Egypt with Jacob, those who were his direct descendants, not counting his sons' wives, numbered 66 persons. And with the two sons who had been born to Joseph in Egypt, the members of Jacob's family, which went to Egypt, were 70 in all. And God has said, "I'm going to make a great nation of you." And that's, we're going to see phenomenal growth in a relatively short period of time of the nation of Israel, the people of Israel. Starting from that 70 people grew that great nation that God had prophesied. In verse 28, "Now Jacob sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to get directions to Goshen." And that's interesting, too, that he's sending Judah, because he's not sending his oldest son, which normally is the preeminent one. But he sends Judah ahead of him to Joseph to get directions to Goshen. And when they arrived in the region of Goshen, Joseph had his chariot made ready and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And as soon as Joseph appeared before him, he threw his arms around his father, and he wept for a long time. Israel said to Joseph, "Now I'm ready to die, since I've seen for myself that you are still alive." And we have to imagine the emotion of that, of having thought for so long that your son was dead, and then finding out, no, he is alive, so you know he's alive, but then when you actually see him and can embrace him, had to be a very emotional time. Verse 31, Joseph said to his brothers and his father's household, "I will go up and speak to Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brother and my father's household who were living in the land of Canaan have come to me. The men were shepherds. They tend to livestock, and they have brought along their flocks and herds and everything they own. When Pharaoh calls you in and says, "What is your occupation?" you should answer, "Your servants have tended livestock from our boyhood on, just as our fathers did." Then you will be allowed to settle in the land of Goshen, for all shepherds are detestable to Egyptians. I think that's an important thing for us to learn and focus on. I mean, just imagine, number one, that you have these people coming in that it could easily be some resentment because, number one, Pharaoh's handpicking these people and sending the chariots to get them and saying, "I'm giving you all this land." And then what do they do for a living? They do something that is detestable to you. And eventually we see the role that the children of Israel do have in a very subservient role. So I thought that was an interesting part, just the fact that they are detestable to him. Any comment, thoughts or comments? We'll keep going. So 47, beginning in verse 1, Joseph went in and said to Pharaoh, Joseph went in and said to Pharaoh, "My father and my brothers and their flocks and their herds and all that they have come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen." He took 5 men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" And as Joseph had instructed him, so they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers." They said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, therefore, please let your servants live in the land of Goshen." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, put them in charge of my livestock." So as we had read last week, we see again this week, they weren't just welcomed in. They were given the very best that was available. And it's also, as Joseph is virtually in charge of everything except Pharaoh himself, second only to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's also saying, "Let them take care of my livestock." So they're being granted a lot from Pharaoh, and at the same time, there's a little bit of an obligation on the other side. If you have any comments, raise your hands. Okay, we're going to start with Walker, and we'll go around the room. If you couldn't hear that, Walker was saying that God put them in this position where they are looked down on, and to some extent that's the same thing with Christians today in the world. The world doesn't always accept, often looks down. We really see that a lot without getting political, we see that a lot today, that you can pretty much in this country say anything you want about Christians, whereas you couldn't say it about other faiths. It's just not socially acceptable to say it about other. But, you know, God has put them in that position. It's a good example for us, I think was the point that Walker was making. Back in the back. Right, we don't see an assimilation of them with the Egyptian people. They are a separate people. All right, any other hands? Ray. The keepers of livestock? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear all that, Ray. I'm going to get closer. You were saying that that's a good question. I don't know if it is in. He did tell them, he says, to tell them that we were keepers of livestock. I don't know a distinction between that and keepers of sheep. I don't have an answer to that. I've got to have private conversations with you guys before, because Seth asked me a question I couldn't answer, and now Ray's asked me a question I can't answer. I'm just kidding.
I took it as just being honest with who his family is to Pharaoh. Like, we're Christians. We got to be honest with the world. This is who we are. And they're shepherds. That's who they are. Even though you don't like us or what we do, that's who we are. And they weren't ashamed of it. And like we said, and they were cut off by themselves and allowed to grow and prosper and become the nation that God wanted them to be.
And I did find it interesting that Joseph had to take the time to tell them, this is what you say to Pharaoh. And, you know, it's like preparation. And I wonder, we can speculate on different things. One thing that I wondered was, they don't want to present themselves as very prominent or very specific about anything that would come in and for want of a better word, come in and take away jobs or things that the Egyptians have. Richard, did you have a...
I was just going to say that they may have just been nervous and forgotten what they were supposed to say.
Richard said they may have just been nervous and forgotten what they were supposed to say. That's what they had done before.
Father,
You know, we can look at a lot of questions here. I mean, it says he took five of his brothers with him. Why did he just take five? You know, why didn't he take three? Why didn't he take them all? We don't know. We're not told. It's just presented. That's what it is. Stacy. Yeah, maybe it's primarily, most of their livestock is sheep, or the majority of their livestock may be sheep, because it does say their flocks and their herds and everything they own. So they brought it all. Where did I leave off now? Okay, so he put those in. He said, if you have any capable men, put them in charge of my livestock as well, which also says it's more than. Obviously, he has more than sheep. So then we go ahead in verse 7. Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh, which I found interesting that he's blessing Pharaoh and you expect him to be in a more of a subservient role. Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many years have you lived? So Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life. Nor have they attained the years that my father lived during the days of their sojourning. I found that interesting, and you can kind of see that. A lot of bad things had happened to Joseph. To Jacob. The disappointment in his sons. You know, Reuben. You know, when his sons, back in chapter 34, are being very devious and very deceitful, and he's losing his son, Joseph. Been an unhappy life. Verse 10, Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence. So Joseph settled his father and his brothers, and he gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had ordered. Joseph provided his father and his brother and all his household with food according to their little ones. And this just is showing the providence of God in bringing these people to putting Joseph in the position he was in. And we're going to see later, as we saw last week, a little recap, but, you know, the brothers were afraid of Joseph when they first saw him, you know, rightfully so. You know, your brother just sold you into slavery, and you've achieved this position of prominence. And Joseph says over and over, it's not me, it's not God, it's not what you did, this was all God's plan. And so having him in this position of providence, of prominence, was really very much part of God's plan. In verse 13, 47, there was no food in all the land. Now we're seeing the years of plenty. If you remember the prophecy from the dream that the Pharaoh had, there'd be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. So we've reached that famine stage now. There was no food in all the land because the famine was very severe, and the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. Joseph gathered all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they brought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. When the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us food, for why should we die in your presence? For our money is gone. Then Joseph said, give up your livestock, and I will give you food for your livestock, since your money is gone. So we're seeing the people, first they spend all the money that they have to buy food, and then they come back to Joseph and say, we don't have any more money. And Joseph says, well, give me your livestock. And so the people give their livestock, and we'll see as the famine continues and the people have less and less, they grow more and more subservient and more dependent on the Egyptians taking care of them. In verse 17, so they brought their and Joseph taking care of them, really. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for their horses and their flocks and the herds and the donkeys. He fed them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. Imagine what happens the next year, how you put yourself in that position. You've just given all your money 1 year. Next year, you've given all your livestock, all your herds. Then that year ends, and you have no more food. It's a very perilous position. When that year they ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, "We will not hide from my Lord that our money is all spent, and the cattle are my Lord's. There is nothing left for my Lord except our bodies and our lands." Now we're going to see people that give up their freedom, become slaves in order to be fed. And they said, "Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we and our land will be slaves to Pharaoh. So give us seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not be desolate." Very perilous situation. And as we see, they've just given up pretty much everything. Verse 20, "So Joseph brought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for every Egyptian sold his field, because the famine was severe upon them. Thus the land became Pharaoh's." And so we see Pharaoh's power and control just continues to grow. "As for the people, he removed them to the cities from one end of Egypt's border to the other. Only the land of the priest did he not buy, for the priest had an allotment from Pharaoh, and they lived off the allotment which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. Then Joseph said to the people, 'Behold, I have today bought you and your land for Pharaoh. Now, here is seed for you that you may sow the land, and the harvest shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and four-fifths shall be your own for seed of the field, and for your food, and for those of your households, and as food for your little ones.'" So this began Pharaoh getting 20% of everything. And so we read next, and we'll see that that continues. So verse 25, they said, "You've saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's slaves." So Joseph made it a statute concerning the land of Egypt, valid to this day, that Pharaoh would have the fifth. Only the land of the priests did not become Pharaoh's. Verse 27, "Now Israel lived in the land of Egypt in Goshen, and they acquired property in it, and they were fruitful and became very numerous." And this is the growth of the nation that God had prophesied. "Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. Verse 29, "When the time for Israel to die drew near, he called his son Joseph to him, and he said, 'Please, if I found favor in your sight, place now your hand under my thigh and deal with me in kindness and faithfulness. Please do not bury me in Egypt. But when I lie down with my fathers, you shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place.' And he," Joseph, "said, 'I will do as you have said.' And he said, 'Swear to me.' So he swore to him. Then Israel bowed in worship at the head of the bed." So he wanted to go back clearly and not be buried in Egypt. And we'll see a pretty strong procession as those wishes are carried about. Genesis chapter 48. Any questions or comments before we move on? Beginning of verse 1. "Now it came about those times that Joseph said, 'Behold, your father is sick.'" Joseph was told, "Behold, your father is sick." So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with him. When it was told to Jacob, "Behold, your son Joseph has come to you," Israel collected his strength and sat up in the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and numerous, and I will make you a company of peoples, and will give this land to your descendants after you for an everlasting possession.'" So he's just repeating the prophecy that we already had seen. But he says, "Now for your two sons who were born in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine." So essentially he's adopting Joseph's children as his own. "Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine as Reuben and Simeon are, but your offspring that are born after them shall be yours. They shall be called by the names of their brothers and in their inheritance. Now as for me, I came from Paddan. Rachel died to my sorrow in the land of Canaan on the journey when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem." So it's kind of interesting. It seems that this is the first time that he's actually seen Joseph's sons, and you would have thought when he had come there earlier that he would have had Joseph. I guess that's looking at it the way we would today. We'd certainly want to be showing off our grandchildren, but this seems to be the first time that that happens. There we go. Verse 8, then Israel saw Joseph's sons. He said, "Who are these?" Joseph said to his father, "They are my sons, whom God has given to me." So he says, "Bring them to me, please, that I may bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were so dim with age that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them closer, and he kissed them and embraced them. Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face, and behold, God has let me see your children as well." Had to be a very moving and emotional time. The next part is interesting, and we'll see. Verse 12, then Joseph took them from his knees and bowed with his face to the ground. Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right, and he brought them close to him. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the hand of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, crossing his hands, although Manasseh was first born. In verse 15, he blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my father Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and may my name live on in them, and the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and may they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." Now when he crossed his hands and he put his right hand on the younger and his left hand on the older one, that was not the order that Joseph was expecting. The right hand normally goes to the oldest child. In verse 17, when Joseph saw that his father had laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him. And he grasped his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Joseph said to his father, "Not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head." But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He will become a people, and he will also be great. However, this younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall be a multitude of nations." Any thoughts on that or comments? It's pretty straightforward. In verse 20, he blessed them that day, saying, "By you Israel will pronounce blessings, saying, may God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh." Then he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, "Behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. I will give you one portion more than your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow." You know, I looked at that, and I couldn't find any other reference about taking the land of the Amorite with his sword and his bow. That's kind of mysterious to me. But I guess it's just a little bit more that he had. But he's saying that essentially Joseph's going to get a double portion from the brothers to Ephraim and Manasseh. Any thoughts or questions before we go on to 49? Okay, we'll keep going then. Then Joseph summoned his sons and said, "Assemble yourselves that I may tell you what will befall you in the days to come." And then he begins to prophesy. "Gather together and hear, O sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power." Again, because he's the firstborn. But then he says, "Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence. Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." So although he is the firstborn and should be the one most prominent, the one that should be preeminent, because of his behavior and because of his actions, he was not. And as we continue, let me see here. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Walker covered this back in Genesis chapter 34. So let my soul not enter into their counsel. Let not my glory be united with their assembly. Because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will dispense them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So again, I guess we're going to, you know, we all recognize that actions have consequences, and Judah was making sure that his sons understood that their actions resulted in the consequences, that despite the birth order, because of the way the conduct that they had displayed, their role became further down in the order of things. In verse 8, he says, "Now Judah, your brother shall praise you." So Judah, child number 3, son number 3, raises in prominence. "Your brother shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches when he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people." So Judah becomes preeminent, and we see through the lineage that lineage through Judah goes on to David, goes on in Matthew 1 to Christ. Thoughts or comments? All right, we'll keep going. I think we have time to keep on with these. Where am I? 13 through 15. Verse 13, "Zebulun will dwell at the seashore and shall be a haven for ships, and his flank shall be toward Sidon. Issachar is a strong donkey laying down between the sheepfolds. When he saw that a resting place was good and that the land was pleasant, he bowed his shoulder to bear burdens and became a slave at forced labor." So he's speaking about each of his sons. Verse 16, "Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way of a horned snake of the path that bites at the horse's heels, so that his rider falls backwards. For your salvation I wait, Lord, and as for Gad, raiders shall raid him, but he will raid at their heels. As for Asher, his food shall be rich, and he will yield royal dainties." 21, "Naphtali is a doe let loose. He gives beautiful words. Joseph is a beautiful bough, a fruitful bough by a spring. Its branches run over a wall. The archers bitterly attacked him and shot at him and harassed him, but his bow remained firm. His arms are agile. From the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, from there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel." Continuing in 25, and "from the God of your father who helps you, and from the almighty one who blesses you with blessings from heaven above, blessings of the deep that lie beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of your father have surpassed the blessings of my ancestors. Up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills, may they be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of his head of the one distinguished among his brothers." Last child, Benjamin, in 27. "Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours his prey, and in the evening he divides the spoil. All of these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what the Father said to them when he blessed them. He blessed them, every one of them, with a blessing appropriate to them." Thoughts or comments? It's a quiet group this morning. We started off with some comments, and now everybody's gone quiet. All right, then he charged them, verse 29, and he said to them, "I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, that is in the Mamre, excuse my pronunciation, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. There they are buried. There they buried Abraham and his wife Sarah. There they buried Isaac and his wife Rebekah. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is in it purchased from the sons of Heth. Then Jacob finished charging his sons. He drew his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. So after he had made this last soliloquy, I guess, a prophecy about his sons and to his sons, and he does tell them, as he had told Joseph, I don't want to be buried in Egypt. I want to go back where my forefathers were buried. That takes us to 50. Excuse me. So he died. Joseph fell on his father's face, and he wept over him, and he kissed him. And that's the first bell. Okay. There was a long, I'm not going to read all of this, but there was a long, long funeral procession. I think 70 days. Let's drop down to chapter 11, verse 7. Joseph went to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his household, and the elders of the land of Egypt, and all the household of Joseph and his brothers and his father's household, left only their little ones and their flocks and herds in the land of Goshen. There also went out with him both chariots and horsemen. It was a very great company. And when they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, they lamented there with a very great and sorrowful lamentation, and he observed 7 days mourning for his father. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning of the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, this is a grievous mourning for the Egyptians. Drop down to 12, verse 12. His sons did for him as he had charged them. His sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the field of Machpelah along with Mamre, which Abraham had bought along with the field for a burial site from Ephron the Hittite. And after they buried their father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, and all that had gone with him to bury his father. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all that we did wrong? So they're still worried. They still have a guilty conscience, and rightfully so. And they're thinking, he was only nice to us while our father was alive. Now he's going to drop the hammer on us. So in verse 16, they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father charged before he died, saying, thus shalt thou say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of God, of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, and this is what he said all along about that, that it's not Joseph, it's God's plan. Do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. The last two verses, Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. Thank you all for your attendance, your attention, and your participation. Next week, we'll kind of summarize Genesis.